Ms. Rasmussen, good morning to you.
May it please the court, opposing counsel. My name is Sally Rasmussen. I represent the appellant, Sonia Becker. This case is important for primarily two reasons. The first is to preserve the integrity of appellate review by not allowing trial court judges to modify orders that are already on appeal. And the second is to preserve the constitutionally protected right to due process in all civil proceedings, including domestic relations matters, and in particular those brought during the pendency of an appeal.
Was the court's order of June 14, 2018 a temporary order or an order modifying the decree?
It is a permanent order modifying the decree.
What about the order suggests that it is permanent and that it was intended to modify the decree?
The application to modify the decree, called a motion in this case, a motion, application, complaint, whatever you call it, was filed requesting permanent relief from the court to modify the parenting plan to provide specific parenting time with one of the children and to provide telephone parenting time with the same child. There was no reference in that pleading that it was brought pursuant to 42351 or that it was intended to be a temporary order.
The summer parenting time was for 2018 alone, is that correct?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
The summer parenting time Mr. Becker and Christina, I believe.
Correct.
Was that for the summer of 2018 alone?
The parenting time order that was entered was limited in time to a specific time frame in the summer of 2018.
So there's nothing going forward after that?
Not in this order, no.
Is that issue moot at this point?
Well, the problem still arises because we had parenting time orders
That problem's over. We're not going to have that same experience in 2019. Is that correct?
Well, because that parenting time did not occur, there's now been an action to enforce it, which the judge has stayed pending the outcome of the appeal.
Do we know that?
No.
Is that in our record?
No. Actually, we do, because there was a third bill of exceptions that was brought up by Appellee, and in there is discussion about the fact the court is not going to entertain that particular contempt action for an order that may be void. And so then there was that. But then when that visitation or parenting time was lost or didn't occur, it can be assumed that there's going to be something to say, well, I didn't get that, now I'm entitled to something else. But the order itself was time limited to the summer of 2018, but not the other parenting order.
By the time that this hearing occurred in June of 2018, our original opinion had been released, which in effect said the child custody parenting time visitation is not going to be changed by this court, correct?
Correct.
So we are talking about a time while post-opinion motions were pending, and the statute that gives the district court temporary authority also speaks in terms of aid of appellate jurisdiction. So at the time when the district court considered this motion in June, the district court knew, or should have known at least, counsel certainly would have informed the court that the child custody provisions were not being changed by the appellate court. And so it was purely as to the second, the June 2018 summer visitation, that was simply enforcing an order that the appellate court had already upheld, correct?
It was inconsistent.
And how was it inconsistent?
Because, well, one of the overarching issues in the first appeal was whether the referee's parenting plan would govern the parties or whether the trial court's parenting plan would govern the parties. And this court decided that the trial court's parenting plan would govern the parties. It affirmed the parenting provisions in the decree, issued its decision, and then we waited for the mandate to spread. So once the mandate spread, we have an order, a decree out of this court saying these are the summertime provisions for the parties. But by this time, the trial court had entered a permanent order on telephone and parenting time saying something completely different.
Now, as to the telephone, I'm talking, there are two paragraphs in that order. Paragraph one, I'm sort of following your argument, but as to paragraph two, which is simply the time that Christina is going to have with Mark during June of 2018, what's your best argument that there's some conflict of that order with the decree that we affirmed?
The decision by this court had been issued, but the mandate had not been issued or spread. And so it was only happenstance that the timing occurred that way. So if, for instance, it had issued maybe before that order or after that order, I'm trying to think of how that would be, but it was only happenstance and timing that we didn't have those two orders that were competing. So if it happened to come down during the week of his parenting time and in June, we've got one order saying one thing and the decree saying something completely different.
I'm trying to keep up here. So the events that about which we speak occurred post-opinion but prior to the mandate?
Correct.
In that window?
Correct.
Thank you.
Well,
or is that
except
right?
That we ended up with two permanent inconsistent orders in this case. We have the June 14, 2018 order, and even if we eliminate the parenting time provision, which is time limited, we still have an ongoing permanent order on telephone parenting time that is not time limited. It is a permanent order. There is nothing in the order to indicate it is temporary in nature at all.
Does it reference the decree at all?
No.
Does it reference the parenting plan at all? Does it even use the word modification? I'm just struggling a little bit with the characterization of it as a permanent order or as a modification of either the parenting plan or the decree, because I just don't see that anywhere in the four corners of that order.
But in effect, it modifies it. And there's nothing in the order that references 42351 or temporary order or an order that will end at once the mandate is spread. There's nothing that limits it. So we have this order that continues in perpetuity, and we have the decree and a parent who says, do I follow the decree, which is now final, that tells me I must prohibit this conduct, or do I follow the judge's order from June that says I have to require certain conduct or contact that the decree prohibits?
Procedurally, it was brought on as a modification?
It was brought
with service and all the formalities of that kind of thing?
No, that was the second issue, and that is the failure to provide due process.
Okay.
No service of process. It was filed as a motion directed
all
to
all the procedural things you would do in a real and something we would all characterize as a garden variety modification.
Appellant argues it is also required in any kind of a proceeding that would be brought even during the pendency of appeal. There is nothing in the statutory framework that says due process does not apply because an appeal is pending.
Isn't due process achieved, though, by setting it for hearing and giving notice of hearing and having the opportunity to be present? Is that the due process requirement?
The due process requirement is found in our statutory framework, and that is 42364 subsection 6 and 42352. Which require that any complaint to modify be personally served upon the opposing party along with a summons.
There's
no exception for something that's filed during an appeal, or even if, as Appellee contends, that this was filed pursuant to 42351. There's no exception for that.
Isn't that a statutorily based jurisdictional argument, not one grounded in due process at all?
The service of process issue is a due process issue.
But isn't it funded? Before we get to due process, we have a statute that says you have to commence a modification by serving a summons, and they didn't serve a summons. Isn't that a statutory issue without even getting to due process?
Correct. It's two-pronged. One is the failure to follow the statutory procedures, but the statutory procedures are intended to protect a party's due process rights. Due process starts with notice. The Constitution requires adequate notice and an opportunity to be heard.
I guess my point is, this is maybe a hobby horse of mine. I keep hearing due process, due process, due process, but if the statute is complied with, there isn't a due process concern.
That is true.
So.
Those statutes are.
And we address statutory arguments before we address constitutional arguments. So really, the argument here is statutory, not constitutional.
It is both, in my opinion.
All right, thank you.
That's what I suggested.
Thank you very much. Mr. Keiger, good morning to you.
I'm Mr. Sip, Your Honor.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Mr. Keiger, most would say, is probably better looking and a little more intelligent. I'm his co-counsel, Bradley Sip.
Mr. Sip, good morning to you.
Thank you, Judge. May it please the court, counsel. First, I'd like to say, there is no due process issue here. This case remained open. 42351 subsection 2 gave the trial court.
Was this brought under 42351?
Judge, it doesn't say that it was, and it doesn't say that it wasn't. Obviously.
Just assume that it is?
Well, during the hearing, 42351 was brought up.
By
counsel. Counsel for the appellant did not appear at that hearing. However, when this motion was filed.
Who was counsel at that time?
Sally Rasmussen was counsel for the appellant. David Keiker and myself were counsel for the appellant.
Who was notice sent to for the hearing?
Sally Rasmussen.
Judge, that's on the record?
That is in the record, Judge.
So we're kind of back to some of the questions we had for Ms. Rasmussen. If this is a modification and there's a statutory procedure, how was that complied with?
But it's not a modification.
So that would be your answer, it's not a modification.
Because it couldn't be. Because I could not file a complaint to modify until the mandate spread.
Did you try?
We had before, and that had been dismissed. The court said you can't file a complaint to modify until the mandate spreads. So what we did was file a motion, and under 42351, the court retains jurisdiction to decide custody issues. We noticed Ms. Rasmussen in our motion. We filed it timely. They did not appear.
Custody issues in aid of appellate jurisdiction, not just any and all custody issues,
well,
isn't
Judge,
it?
Reading from the statute, I believe it says, when final orders relating to proceedings governed by sections 42347 to 42381 are on appeal, and such appeal is pending, comma, the court that issued such orders shall retain jurisdiction to provide for such orders regarding support, custody, parenting time, visitation, and then it goes into other issues. But I think that specifically the court's retaining jurisdiction over custody and parenting time. For example, hypothetically, what if a parent, while something's on appeal, the parent that has custody of the child moves a registered sex offender in? You have to be able to file a motion. Something has to be able to happen before this case.
Can the court permanently change the custody at that point?
No. Okay. And we're not saying that there was any permanent change made.
So I believe this is upon a temporary order?
Upon the entry of the mandate, this order expired.
How's the telephone provision in the second order expire?
Upon the entry of the mandate. Now, what's not in the...
Does that say that in the court order?
It does not say that in the order.
Does that second order... Is it contradictory to the decree in the parenting plan?
I don't believe it's contradictory. I believe it's additional. If you review the parenting plan in Becker and the amount of contact that Mark had specifically with Christina, it doesn't really lay any in specifics out. And so at this point in time that she came to him and wanted to have a relationship, we asked for additional provisions.
So as we sit here today, does Mr. Becker have this same type of phone contact allowable with Christina?
As we sit here today, what's not in the record was that in November of 2018, Mr. Becker was granted the legal and physical custody of Christina. We're here today
on a
completely...
But is that order of June 2018 that grants that telephone contact, is that still in place?
No, Judge.
And why not?
Because the mandate spread.
And because custody's been modified?
Yes, it's obviously it's moot because he has custody.
But we don't know that.
You don't.
That's not in our record.
That's correct, Judge. I'm simply telling you that in November of 2018, an order was entered giving him the legal and physical custody of that child.
But the real question is, what can the trial court do during this period of time? Is that the real question?
Enter temporary orders to allow for custody, parenting time, visitation. I realize that order didn't state that it would expire upon the spreading of the mandate. But what we know is, you all had made your opinion. It was published, just the mandate had not been spread. He did not enter an order at that time that was in conflict with that, but I believe he could have. Once again, if a parent would be found to be unfit completely, they had just gone off the deep end, why could the trial court that retains jurisdiction over custody not make a change? Are we saying that until the mandate spreads and it's on appeal, that judge has no authority to do what's in the best interests of a child? That wouldn't make any sense. That's absurd. He has to be able to make decisions specifically regarding support, custody, parenting time, and visitation as is necessary for the best interests of that child.
On a permanent basis? Is the principle that you're articulating sort of implicitly on a temporary basis, or are you asserting that it's broad enough to be that the trial court can permanently modify despite the pendency of the appeal?
It's my argument that any of those orders, whether they say they're temporary or not, would expire upon the spreading of the mandate, and at that time a complaint to modify could be filed, as it was in this case, and we asked for custody of the child and it was granted.
So parties would infer that order was temporary because it was allegedly brought under 42351, even though it's not included in the motion, and the order doesn't say anything about being temporary. That's all to be inferred by implication.
I think it would be form over substance. The substance of the order says what it says. However, let's say that at this point in time, someone tried to go and hold another party in contempt.
Which sounds like it's ongoing or happened or...
Well, except that became moot, extra moot, once Mr. Becker was given custody of the child. The reality is, if we were to say now, Mrs. Becker, you didn't give Mr. Becker his January 2019 telephone parenting time. Well, there is no such thing.
So you are, in effect, conceding that paragraph 1 of the June 2018 order expired, that it's gone.
They both expired.
Well, the one was obvious. It was for a specified
date. Through the summer, Judge, it expired.
Do we need anything outside of our record to conclude that this case is moot?
Well, no. I mean, it would be moot regardless. Well, I guess it would be regardless, because as soon as the mandate spread, this order terminated. So at that point, this whole thing is moot as soon as the mandate spread.
Have we ever said that?
I think that's the issue. I think maybe you need to say that, or you could explain to simple attorneys that
you're inferring things that we've never said. Statute doesn't say it. So, I mean, it's a pretty broad inference.
Well, it just says, while such appeal is pending, and so when the appeal's no longer pending, these orders that were issued...
And that's not in the statute anywhere.
That's not in the statute. I think some clarification would help. Mm. But it's our contention that they're basically void. They've terminated.
Mr. Sipp, we're struggling a little to characterize the order of June 14th, if that's not obvious. Is there anything about that order that suggests it was either a final order or a judgment? Does it satisfy the definition of a judgment?
No, and it doesn't satisfy...
Does it satisfy the definition of a final order?
It is not a final order, because it cannot be a final order. Because I don't think you can get a final order without...
Was it in a special proceeding?
It was in a motion. It was in a simple hearing on a motion. So to get a final order, I think we have to file a complaint to modify. We couldn't file a complaint to modify because the mandate hadn't spread. So we believe the only authority the court has at that point in time is to enter temporary orders until the mandate has been spread, and then at that point in time, a party could file a complaint to modify.
So is it your position that an appeal in this case has been taken from a temporary order, which is also now moot?
It's like triple moot, yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. I don't really have anything to ask you, because I think that the order was moot when we came here, but we felt that we needed to come to explain our side.
Aren't you asking us to dismiss the case?
I think completely, Judge. I mean, there's no reason to remand it. The order itself that we would be asking you to uphold is now terminated.
And I think you're contending we lacked even appellate jurisdiction to decide it.
Because it's a temporary order. So for those reasons, we'd ask that you dismiss the appeal.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
I do. Before you leave, Ms. Rasmussen, I do have a question for you. What is your position on mootness?
Thank you, Your Honor. I would like to address this.
You may.
What isn't in the record, there was a subsequent custody modification. It was uncontested. Child wanted to live with dad for a while. Mom said, fine, go live with dad and see how you like that. So Mr. Becker now has custody of this particular child, but that does not end the mother's summer parenting time. The summer parenting time is the problematic diverging opinions. We have one opinion that says she has to allow certain contact with the father during her parenting time in the summer, unlimited telephone time, and the other one prohibits all of that. So in summer 2019, moving forward, what does the mother do? We have a permanent order saying she must allow certain contact with the father when she has the child in the summer, and we have a decree that prohibits that contact. It is not moot.
Was the parenting plan modified when custody was modified?
I'm trying to remember that order. No, but you... And the mootness issue, as soon, the judge had already ordered that June 14 modification. But when the mandate spread, if this was temporary, this would take effect. And I didn't understand Appley to say that this just goes away. So how can we have two permanent orders on the same issue in effect at the same time? What does the mother do in the summer? Which order does she follow? We have an order that is not temporary in nature, does not mention anything about being temporary. We have two orders governing that issue, and that is just prohibited.
But doesn't the appellee admit today that both paragraphs of the order were moot once the appeal was, the mandate was spread? Has he admitted that today? Does that take care of your concern about contempt in 2018 for summer visitation?
If this court would find that order became moot because of operation of law or something, then it would reinstate the provisions of the decree and there would be one order on that issue.
And then a new modification order that's been entered would carry forward.
Yes, I think the court needs to be very careful, though there is Burns versus Burns, the 2016 case, and I believe there's an issue lurking in there on the court supported the bailiff's decision on appellate review and not allowing any trial court review during the pendency of an appeal on any issues that were in the order on appeal. And the Burns decision by this court, the language in that opinion supports bailiffs and says the trial court in that case addressed only custody, and the only issue on appeal, the only order, involved child support, so the trial court could address custody. But what the court didn't address in the Burns issue, and I think is again present in this case, is Burns also addressed parenting time and child support. So Bayless would say the trial court could address custody and parenting time because only child support was on appeal, but could not address child support. And no permanent orders on child support during the pendency of this appeal. And then once the mandate issues, jurisdiction is returned to the trial court can do it. But same thing happens. Once the mandate issues, you have to, unless those orders are very clear, and any orders issued in this case since the first appeal have been very clear. They are temporary in nature, will lapse upon the issuance of mandate. So unless you have orders that are extremely clear, then you're left with two permanent orders on the same issue and a party left trying to figure out what to do.
I want to be sure I understand your position about the effect of the pendency of this appeal, the one we're all here on today. Is it your contention that this appeal has any effect on what we now know to have been a modification of custody ordered in November of 2018?
No. No, this appeal is separate from that because it addresses an issue that is still present, and that is the summer contact between the children and their parents.
So you're saying because of the nature of this appeal, it has no effect on the custody modification that was entered by the court in November of 2018?
Correct. The mother still must address the telephone parenting time in the summer. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That takes us to the next case of the day, which is